Start in a few minutes. Wait for Mrs. Rich. Maybe.
Maybe not.
Your trip, Paul. Good?
I love Boston.
Pardon?
Boston.
Oh, that's right, Boston.
Yeah. Gotta go Philly.
You go to the North End?
Oh, yeah.
Little Mike's Bakery or?
It was just the North End. I got some sort of. Hell, I don't know what it was. It was all in frickin' Italian. I just pointed. Cause I saw the word lobster.
There's a place called that Mama Mia's.
But it is so good out there. So good. Crack the whip, get her in here. All right, if this goes past two, I'm late. Quartz pancake. I can remember going to that when I was.
When is that? Oh, that's December.
December 11th. Proceeds.
Is the Christmas parade gonna be that day?
Yeah, they moved it back. Be a busy day.
Is that when the SEC championship is that day?
No, that's why they moved the parade. It was the first week, the fourth.
That's the reason they moved it.
Yep, well, cause Florida kept getting them and then parade and games that kicking off at 4:30.
All right, call this meeting to order.
Parade anyway.
This is the Tuesday, October 26th, city council work session on Parks Master Plan. And Madam Clerk, if you just call the roll.
Sure. Mayor Ure.
Here.
Mr. Orr.
Here.
Ms. Heimbuckle.
Here.
Mr. Priester.
Here.
Ms. Rich.
Here.
Mr. Gwynn.
Here. All right, and at this time, next item on the agenda is public comments. Is there anyone from the public who might like to make any comments before we get started? Okay. Next is the Recreation and Parks Master Plan discussion. Rick, you want to introduce folks?
Well, I think maybe I'll start by introducing Kathy Crowell and let her come up.
All right.
I will tell you that this is the first ever master plan for parks and the city has ever had. So we were grateful that the council supported our efforts to move that forward. But why don't you give a quick overview and then recognize the team.
So for about 5 months, we've been working with the consultants in cooperation with the vision plan that the city and the community has been putting together. The bulk of that has been a facility analysis, determining what we have so that we can prepare for where we need to go, and identifying the standard that the community wants. So without getting into anybody else's thunder here, I'm going to introduce our Rec Commission Chairperson, Ross Jones. He's going to introduce the program, and then our master planner will come up.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time. My name is Ross Jones. I serve on the Recreation Commission and on the 2035 Leadership Group, and it's been my pleasure to serve a small role on there. I'm a rookie here in front of council, so I'm going to keep this short and sweet, a little more introductory. I'll leave it to the professional to inundate you with graphs and data and all of that stuff. But this is important. You know, on behalf of the Leadership Group, we hope you'll take very seriously the strategies that are laid out in this master plan. You heard from us a couple weeks ago, talked to you about mobility and urban form and site design. I think staff and the consultants will agree that except for maybe urban form, some of our most heated discussions came when we were talking about parks. We recognized on the Leadership Group that parks are extremely important to our quality of life, to our health going forward in the next 25 years, and really to our sense of community. Okay. Now, a lot of people played a part in this plan, the Recreation Commission, consultant staff, but also the residents of Ocala. Meetings were open to the public. We held public surveys. and I know some of their feedback is directly addressed in this master plan. So I'll wrap this up. I'm already blabbing, but a couple weeks ago, the leadership group, we came up with a vision for Ocala that said, Ocala is a great place to live, play, and prosper. And if we're going to achieve our vision, we've got to have a plan to win. Mr. Horst just said, we've never had a parks master plan in the recent history. Not to steal a phrase from Urban Meyer, but you know, this plan that's about to be presented for the next 25 years when it comes to parks, this is our plan to win. So thank you for your time.
So this plan doesn't turn out like Clark football team.
Yeah, I'd like to following that, once again, I am a Gator, but I'm also challenging some of the decisions made this year by the University of Florida. So with that, we'll move forward. Mayor, Councilman, thank you very much for being able to present our work here today. It's been a great honor on our part to be able to work with your citizens as well as your staff and as well as with respect to the development of this master plan. Today is really kind of a first presentation to you. I imagine we'll be back in front of you as we start getting a little bit more dialed down into some of the CIP for the master plan. But we wanted to come and come for you today and give you an update, give you the ability to answer or ask us questions and have us answer. So today, really, what we're going to go through is just kind of an update as to where we are in the master plan and let you know that we are approaching the point where we're actually looking to finalize and move forward into actually finalizing the CIP. Today's agenda, we're really going to kind of just give you an overall project overview, talk to you a little bit about the process we went through on the parks inventory and analysis, talk to you about the visioning, the public workshops and visioning that we went through, and also describe a little bit of what the level of service means with respect to the Parks Master Plan, and then just kind of go over the next steps that we're going to go through. Project objectives, right off the bat, that we were looking to address is obviously the first Parks Master Plan that has been done for the city of Ocala, so we needed to go through and actually do a fairly intensive inventory and assessment process to really identify what's on the ground out there today. Our team spent several weeks actually going through that process. We also wanted to make sure that we incorporated the community's vision, obviously addressing the 2035 vision planning process, and make sure that the community had full voice in what we were doing with respect to that. This process this master plan also developed the necessary planning tools for the Parks Department to actually move forward and use as they move forward into the future. Obviously, the master plan is exactly that. It's a plan that but it's also a living document that will need to be addressed as we move into the future. It's also to project what the future facility needs are, and there's multiple methods, and we'll get into actually how that's done, and then also assess the means for what is going to be needed both from a facilities programming acreage standpoint as well as a actual facilities program standpoint moving into the future. And then developing a working budget for the cities moving forward. As I said, one of the first things that we did, we spent several weeks actually doing a detailed inventory of all the city's parks. We dialed down and to divide the city up, and we'll describe this a little bit more as I move forward in the presentation, but we basically broke the city into five different sub-districts. One of the reasons why we did that is because we wanted to be able to make sure that we were addressing the programming needs by area of the city, because as the city grows in the future, there will be more intensive growth in specific areas and less in others. So we wanted to make sure that we were addressing the specific needs by sub-district within the city. As part of our analysis, we did a very detailed programming inventory. We have photographed everything that exists within parks. We have a full cataloging of all of the, literally down to the benches that are within the facilities themselves. City of Ocala right now has four park categories and designations for four park types. There's community, neighborhood, urban open space, and mini parks. And they're basically designated by size. Community parks are anything 20 acres and above. And they usually are more dialed into having more higher active sports recreational programming. Then you get into your neighborhood parks, which are 5 to 10 acres. They can have both active as well as passive recreational uses within them, and are usually more, as the name states, a little bit more neighborhood specific. Urban open spaces, they can range in size, to be quite honest with you, and or in intensity of use, down to literally, you know, point, as it says there, 0.1 acres and up to, in some cases, over 20 acres, because they're designated as urban open space, but they're somewhat unused public open space facilities right now that don't have any recreational programming in them. And then there's mini parks, which are scattered small parks located throughout the city. As I said, we broke the city up into 5 different sub-districts. There is a downtown sub-district, a northwest, a northeast, southeast, southwest. The map that's before you actually does a breakdown and actually shows you exactly how many park facilities are located within each one of those sub-districts. And when I refer to the term LOS, that's the level of service, and that will be a standard acronym that will be followed throughout the rest of the program. Now, I want you to bear in mind that what I just got done telling you is that within the city of Ocala, there's 4 different park classifications, but in calculation of level of service standards, we're only calculating community parks and neighborhood parks, because the level of service is really only geared to active recreational facilities, so if there's of certain size. So when we start getting into the actual physical LOS calculations, just remember that they're being calculated based on only 2 out of 4 of the park types. Along with the 2035 vision plan, our work was being done concurrently with that plan, but at the same time, we also held separate meetings to get additional public input. Obviously, one thing that we did do early on is we developed an online public survey was up and running for a period of a little over 3 months, I believe it was. We will also updated people as to its location, as to where they could access it during the public meetings. We had 226 online participants. We've got a wide variety of input and discussion on the survey, which was wonderful. It really helped us guide a lot of what we were doing as we move forward in the plan. The 2035 leadership group, though, was very instrumental in the development of the master plan also, because they helped us assisted us in developing an overarching goal for the Parks Master Plan itself. I'm not going to go through in detail, but I just want to kind of show you some of the visioning results that we came up with. Two points that I think that I want to point out on here is you'll notice that the very first bullet says that 45% of the respondents occasionally use the park facilities. Now, we thought that was really low. When we actually start looking at how much of the programming and how active the parks are, your parks are actually very active. One thing we started thinking about is that if only 45% of your park facility, or only 45% of the respondents occasionally use the parks, then there's a lot of room to grow the programming and facilities within the parks today to actually meet a greater need that's out there. One thing I'd like to talk about is really getting in the kind of meat of the level of service explanation. Level of service is actually based on population, and there's multiple ways that level of service can actually be calculated. But the general way that level service is calculated is just based on general population. It is not based on demographics. It's not based on any other age classifications or demographic classifications. It's purely based on population. And it's based on population based on the citywide population. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get a better handle on, as the city continues to grow, by breaking the city down by sub-district, we were able to analyze what the various sub-district population growths were going to be within a specific area. The current adopted level of service for the city of Ocala right now is 4.6 acres per 1,000 residents, and that's an average citywide. Once again, we've taken it one step further to break it down by sub-district. Based on the current level of the service required, you have a requirement for 275 acres of parks within the city right now. As we move on to the next, I'll also tell you that you actually exceed that right now, which is very good. One thing that the level of service that does not include, and we specifically elected to actually exclude some of these things, is that we've taken out special use facilities like the golf course, livestock building, and things like that. And you say those are public; those are still public, open to the public. But are they really a recreational programming venue that's widely open to the public? So when you look at a golf course that's say 175 acres of land, and you look at what percentage of the population actually has availability of use of that facility, it's very, very small. Same thing with the livestock pavilion. I mean, your general use by the general public is very small in comparison, even though they're public facilities. So we elected to actually remove those. We've also elected to remove the urban open spaces because they're, like I said, some of those are so small that they're difficult to even calculate where they fall in the overall acreage calculation. Not to mention the facilities programming calculation. We also excluded county parks from this calculation. And any school properties, and we'll get to that later on, and any other private restricted facilities that might be within subdivision, and purely to calculate level service based on public available lands. As I said, there's multiple methodologies for calculation of level service. There is a national methodology. There's a state methodology, and then what we're going to consider to be a problem. The national methodology and the state methodology allows, and is basically our recommendations. There's nothing that is set forth as a mandatory standard with respect to level of service, with respect to parks and recreation calculation. The national level of service actually calculates and makes recommendations for communities to provide parks at 10 acres per thousand. State has a recommendation right now that's at 4.6 per thousand, but we also did other analog studies, and we'll get into that, of other communities throughout the United States and the state to actually get a better handle as to where Ocala actually falls on the scale. As I said, it's usually based on purely on population. It's not demographic specific. Right now the city standard of the 4.6 does not deal with specific demographics or location of the facilities themselves. It's purely whether or not it's made up as an overall city. And the alternative models that we've discussed that we actually looked at were more focused or had specific focus on walkability of parks. One of the things as part of the 2035 vision plan that was kind of a resounding statement to us was that they wanted the city to be much more walkable and accessible to the community. We also looked at other models and other parks master plans, did other analog comparisons of cities that had a much more walkability or used a walkability model also. And so what we're proposing today as part of this master plan is actually kind of a custom version that actually addresses both walkability and addresses a 4.6 per thousand level service. One thing that I will say is that there's also within both the national and state programming for level service standards, they do make recommendations for specific facilities. And I would say that one thing that we actually made a recommendation of is that facilities should be customized to the community. So where we actually and we use this as a methodology to actually kind of proof test where the city of Ocala was with respect to providing specific facilities. But also, we wanted to make it very clear that as the city continues to grow into the future, that they need to actually be very reactionary to what the public wants with respect to their facilities. So if you get into an area of the northwest area of the city and there's a public meetings held in the future, and they don't want 25 tennis courts within their community, but they want more bocce ball courts in their community, then that's something that needs to be addressed and really kind of customized to meet that individual community's needs. So I just want to provide you with those just as a reference, because I think that is something that as we did our analysis of the master plan, it is something that we actually provided analysis and information back to staff on with respect to comparison as a comparison analysis. As I said, analyzed multiple cities as analog studies. And what you'll see is that, once again, Gainesville was at 10 acres per thousand, Lakeland was at 3 acres per thousand, which really surprises. Winter Park was at 10 acres per thousand, City of Orlando was at 3.5 per thousand, Ocala was at 4.6 per thousand. We also looked at other cities, though, that once again that had higher walkability models, and the higher the walkability model was, the higher their level of service became. So the current state suggested, as I said, was 4.6 thousand per resident. As we looked at what the current LOS is for the city right now as it stands today, your current LOS is about 5.9. So you're well above the 4.6 curve right now on what your existing facilities are today. But as we apply the population projection models into the year 2035, your LOS, once again, assuming you don't build another park in the city of Ocala, your LOS is still at 3.8, which is still very good, but it really doesn't address the walkability at that point. Now, if you can read that, I'll be surprised. But we threw this in there just as a example of where all of your existing parks are. And one thing that I think this story starts to tell, just in looking at this small graphic, is that you have a high concentration of parks within the centralized area of development of the historical development of Ocala. But if you start looking at your future demographic projections are for growth, your demographic projections project the highest growth projections to be in the Southwest and the Northeast. So if you look at that, we have a huge deficiency in parks locations based on future growth and build out of the city. So as part of our future work, what we did is we actually started to project where future parks need to be located. One thing that, as we went through this process and we wanted to make sure that the public was involved through this process, we wanted to make sure that both the leadership group and the general public had a voice in deciding what the level of sort of projected future level of service would be for the city. We were told that based on the information that we gave them and the walkability model that we were also following, that the 4.6 per thousand LOS was an acceptable level of service, and that we were to continue that. But what we were to apply that to is by district, not by a citywide model. So that the level of service would actually be met by area, and as the city continues to grow, that there wouldn't be huge deficiencies in any one specific area of the city. Another strong desire was the development of a trail system within the city of Ocala. One thing that became very clear is that when we started asking about how we would adjust the level of service to include trails, one thing that we were told specifically was that trails were to actually be, they wanted trails to be excluded from the minimum 4.6 level service standard, and that trails were to actually be developed on top of that 4.6. Now, one thing that we've done is that we have made recommendation that the level service of the 4.6 be adopted at the comprehensive plan level. So that would be locked in as part of the comp plan, but any development of the trail system and or the walkability model would be adopted as policy to the park's master plan itself. So, and one of the reasons why we chose to make that recommendation is that anything that you provide within your comprehensive plan becomes a method of monitoring by the DCA as to whether or not you're in compliance or in non-compliance. So being that we had a model that we felt was acceptable from a level of service standard from a park's acreage standpoint, we felt that was a relatively safe standard to be able to apply and be able to provide within the comprehensive plan. But since we weren't absolutely sure how the trail system master planning and budgeting was going to be developed and handled in the future, we didn't want to provide anything or make recommendation that would provide anything that could possibly provide or put the city into a position of deficiency in moving forward with respect to future analysis. As I said, we've also applied the half-mile walkability model to our master planning efforts. Now, this does not mean that you have to have a neighborhood or a community park within a half mile. the model, where the model comes in is that we want to make sure that as the city continues to grow, that they have a means to actually provide a recommendation to developers or requirements on developers to actually provide parks within developments and within development areas that are within a half mile or close to a half mile walkability distance. Now that could be simply nothing more than a you know half acre neighborhood playground, but it's really what we came across from the leadership group is that the walkability to these different park areas was extremely important. That they felt that the prioritization of the half mile walkability was very important to make it feel as if parks were interconnected through the city. Let's get to the next slide. The next slide really starts to talk about what our programming needs are for the various sub-districts. And as you'll see at the bottom, what we've done is we've provided a citywide. So basically, your at a 2035 build-out, you'd have to build another two community parks, once you have plus or minus 20 acres and over, and 21 neighborhood parks. Now, that sounds like a lot. And I would say that based on your current projected population in 2035, we've projected, or based on the numbers we've been given, the 2035 projected population almost doubles the population of the, slightly under, but almost doubles the population of the city of Ocala. So really what you're looking at is a fairly substantial expansion of your park system. Now one good thing about this is that you have urban open space scattered throughout the entire city, that you have the ability to actually do conversion of undeveloped urban open space to actually provide facilities within these parks and actually turn them into a classified neighborhood park facility. So we've taken that into consideration and that'll be something that'll need to be looked at moving forward. One thing that the leadership group also asked us to do was take a look at school facilities. Right now, Marion County Schools does not provide joint use recreational facilities or open to the general public. That is not uncommon throughout the state, but I will say that the models throughout the state, or there are models throughout the state that are successful where they have been allowed to actually create joint use facilities, and it is highly successful. And so our recommendation as part of the master plan is that the city and staff actually work with Marion County Schools as schools are projected for development in the future to actually work with Marion County to actually develop joint use facilities. And it really comes down to the design of the facilities as to how the facilities, how access to the facilities are provided. As part of our work, we actually found 11 school sites that we think have the potential for joint use facilities. They would require some design modifications to the existing facilities themselves for accessibility. But we do think that there are at least 11 that we looked at of all the schools within the city. We also are going to be looking at one thing that we did not do, and I'm not really. There's reasoning for it, but we're going to go back and we're going to look at some of the high school facilities again. Because really what's in here right now is we looked at elementary and middle schools, but we need to go back and we need to look at some of the high school facilities again and just make sure that our assumptions were correct with respect to the feasibility of accessibility for those. But we think that is another wonderful way as the city continues to grow in the future and more schools are built in to meet the future population demand, that those facilities can actually be designed to meet the parks development needs jointly. So you may not have to build 21 new, brand new neighborhood parks. Once again, as part of our master plan, we also evaluated numerous sites, I believe it was over 50, that for potential park acquisition. And that was really based on certain property criteria, and then we actually narrowed it down to potential 20 sites the Parks Department has actually gone back in and actually looked at and reviewed the sites and prioritized the ones for potential acquisition. Now these sites are vacant currently, and or have potential land uses on them that would consider them to be vacant. as we said, the 2035 vision plan, one of the primary components of the 2035 vision plan was the development of greenways and trail system. Now, not to shock you, but the calculation of the 2035 vision plan actually shows about 43.8 miles of linear trails. Based on the current LOS standards for trails that is recommended by the state, there's a deficit of about 18 miles of trails right now within the city. The 43.8 miles in the location of those trails right now is purely conceptual. Our recommendation is that the next phase of work really needs to be to develop a trails master plan that starts to provide reality to locationing, programming requirements, right-of-way requirements, potential acquisition locations, and also potential programming for development of parks within private properties. So there could be joint use access. So, but I just want to bring that to your attention right now that based on the current 2035 master plan, that there is a 43.8 mile allotment for trails in there. Now, one thing that it might be difficult to see on this map, but one thing that you'll notice is that there's not a lot of trails within the Northeast, and there's not a lot of trails within the Northeast, Northwest, or Southwest. And those areas, as those areas continue to grow, there will be additional need for additional programming of trails facilities within those areas to actually provide access. As we've talked about throughout the presentation, one thing that has been cited and is obviously before you today for recommendation is that they wanted to adopt, as part of the comp plan amendment, or comp plan, a 4.6 acres per thousand. I think we've discussed that. We discussed the adoption of only at the master plan level of the development of trail system and the half mile walkability criteria. And those were the three standards that really guided our process and recommendation. The next steps that we're going to go through is we'll be working with the staff to actually develop and refine a CIP that will actually project out through 2020. And give a breakdown both of acquisition recommended or average acquisition of properties, as well as what the future facilities programming cost would be to meet the current facilities demand as well as projected future demand. Obviously, the CIP is going to be something that will have to the budget would have to be approved on a yearly basis. Would really need to be evaluated on a yearly basis anyways based on future population projection analysis. Obviously, it's population projections are exactly that, they're projections, and they really need to be evaluated on a year-by-year basis. One thing that we've tried to do, and that we're still refining right now, is we want to make sure that as we develop the CIP, that the CIP had an ability to kind of rectify itself on a five-year period. So that you may fall in a deficit in year 2013, but by the year 2016, you're back on track to meeting your facilities demand. So that, and the reason why we did it that way is to be able to actually start to create a balancing of the budget over the years so that you didn't have any huge spikes in CIP in certain years. Obviously, we're looking to finalize our recommendations and finalize the overall master plan, and happy to answer any questions that you might have, make sure that addressing comments in the overall master plan. Ultimately, the adoption of the master plan is our ultimate goal, and obviously, as we said, analyzing the budget and the CIP will have to be done on a yearly basis and be approved on a yearly basis. But with respect to that, I'm open for any questions that you might have. I know that the document the tree that we gave you of paper is probably pretty lengthy, and I'm surprised if you've even read half of it, but we're happy to answer any questions on anything that you might have.
Good. Council, do you have any questions or comments? Rick?
I have a few on the mic. Under your recommendations 12, you talk about splash parks, skate parks, and rock climbing. I would venture to say splash parks are actually a much higher use rate than your pools, even, and less costly. And frankly, I think we don't need another Pullman community. Splash parks tend to gather a lot more people, and they're a lot cheaper. Rock climbing walls, however, though, you can't do those unless you have staff there.
That's true.
And that's a very staff-intensive and very costly thing. So I don't know, we probably need to think about that a little bit. With regard to the retention stormwater ponds, I agree that there are some capabilities there, but I want to caution against the construction of amenities within the depressed areas, because it invites kids to play in areas that normally flood, and they have storm drain systems. And I can tell you stories of kids who got sucked into pipes and other things, and the liability issues concern me. There's some raised plateau areas. A lot of times you can play fly kites and other things in the basins if they're dry. They're not often dry in Florida. But I think that's a good place to look, but we just need to be cautious. And with regard to the future park sites, has there been a look at our current land holdings within the city, which are a lot of, to see if any of those parks sites match up to any of our current land holdings?
We actually did. The properties and recommendations that we had actually included a map of public ownership properties. And we actually looked at, and then we kind of prioritized those based on which ones we thought were most appropriate for recreational
use. So some of these are leased properties we already own?
Yes.
Okay, and we have those identified. And then the school issue, that's always been a bone of contention for me. I've seen it work beyond just using outdoor utilities. I've seen gymnasiums and other things work very, very well, swimming pools, setups. And I don't know what we've got to do, council, to get our school board to be more receptive to this issue, but I think it's critical. It's all the taxpayers' dime at the end of the day, and it ought to be able to be used after school and weekends and maximize its use. I realize there's issues about, you know, who's going to pay for it, and we can have a cost-sharing formula to help take care of those type of things, but that's really an avenue that I think we need to pursue significantly, in my opinion. And the last comment I would make, which you alluded to, was some type of dedicated funding source, whether that be a percentage of a mill or impact fee or something along those lines. But if we're going to have a master plan and future needs, that will be mostly growth driven. New growth will drive these additional needs, not we have enough for now. New growth needs to pay for it. And we need to think about that very seriously, in my opinion.
Councilman Owen.
I don't even know if this is a question or just a comment or just a your usage of the parks, and I know it's something we've grappled with a lot in this community. If you go by our parks, I think of Jeremy Gant, for example, MCYFL, August to November, I think they're 8 to 10 weeks. Kathy, I think it's what they got, about an 8-week schedule. For example, there's 2,500 kids at MCYFL. I know that their numbers are pushing almost 90% that's county residents. I don't know, as we go through with all this and kind of go with your, we have a lot of county use, and I know we tried it with a little golf course, you know, a county rate or, you know, charging county residents, and it just, everybody gets a little excited. The same thing, they'll, as we tell the school board, just need to be reasonable, work with us, they'll tell city council, well, it's all in the county, so, you know, why we charge it. But just the county use of our parks, and I don't even, how do we grapple with that as we move forward?
Well, I'll tell you that I think that you're right that there's a substantial use of city parks by county residents. I know that it's handled differently throughout the United States, but especially here in Florida. And I know that it's a difficult pill to swallow whenever you start trying to segregate a county resident from a city resident with respect to usage fees or apply a usage fee, but
close to impossible.
It's not impossible. Pommage County is actually a really good model as to how it's been applied, because there's so many city residents down there. They actually have the reverse condition, where the county's building all of the parks, but the city residents are using the parks. And so when a developer comes in to actually develop within an individual city, they have to pay a parks impact fee that the developer really never sees a return on, because the cities actually aren't building building parks within their cities. They're waiting for the county to build and provide facilities. So what they did is they basically say, you have to go in, and whenever you sign up for league play on something, you have to provide residency, verification of residency. And if you are a county resident, you pay a fee for using a city park.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with a community center. If you come and once again, I mean, you don't want to drive people away from the use of the parks. But at the same time, there's, you know, Marion County is not providing financial benefit for maintenance and everything else of city park facilities. So as you continue to grow, that'll be a big issue. I mean, because you're going to have more and more, you know, outlying resident areas that, you know, will be using city parks. So when you start thinking about it, you know, your downtown parks, I mean, you know, one thing that's coming out of the 2035 plan is that you're looking to focus growth within your downtown area. You're still going to have resident usage of all of those parks. Now, you're not going to be able to pay, you're not going to be able to charge everybody for everything, obviously. So it really comes into league play, I think.
I was going to say, it's really not your static parks, it's your program parks, right, such as your ball fields. That's where you have that, right, type of lopsided loading. They don't show up just to go picnic because they can do that where they live,
right,
parks out there, but for the sponsored programs. And typically what he said last is how I've done it and where I've been, where, you know, they tack on another $3 or $5 per person as part of the registration to help cover those costs. But I think the best way to do it is for the city and county to work out a mutual agreement that's supportive, so we don't have to go to the citizenry at all, because at the end of the day, they all pay taxes to one body or the other. But one thing we do know is the citizens of Ocala pay the same taxes in the county, but the county don't pay the same taxes in the city.
Well, our argument is always right. I understand that. They're the ones that got to get. They're the ones that just got to see it our way. Well, I was just curious how that was, because I mean, we do get quite. I mean, do we have any numbers, Kathy, on our swimming pools, for example? Of just, I don't even know if we asked the question of, but just city versus county use.
Because I
know
they stay packed. I mean, during the summer, because everyone pays to use it. It's a fee based program, unlike our ball fields are that you know, they pay. Some of them don't pay anything to use the ball fields for an exclusive period of time.
Well, I think your tennis courts, though, are another good example, because you actually have public school facilities that are actually using your tennis court facilities for where schools that don't have actual tennis facilities are
right.
You know, so they're not really they're not paying anything additional. The schools are not paying anything to the parks department for maintenance and development of their tennis facility. So there is ability to really see the mutual benefit to developing joint parks that joint facilities.
Maybe one example. Well, Well, one thing from a school board standpoint, there's an election next Tuesday, so could be a few fresh faces over there.
Well,
it's
a
good time to
point. You know, they use
a good time to lob in a, hey, how are you doing?
Barter to use theirs back. I would like to say that the county parks are represented here today, and the county parks in and of themselves work very well with our staff. And they work as conjointly and cooperatively as they possibly can until it gets up into that policy level.
I would like to just this is one little site specific area, and I think you may have it labeled on here or not. Booster Stadium, for example, on North 36th. Vanguard is now the only school in Marion County that does not have on-site football facilities.
Right.
They use Booster Stadium. Now, back when Kent was in high school, and maybe going back to Ms. Rich was in high school, it served a purpose, a lot of that schools, but now the school board has saw to it that every school in the county now has on-site football facilities, with the exception of Vanguard. It would be nice to, quite honestly, get that moved at some point, because that opens up a whole area in the Northeast, I think, for some city use up there.
Yep.
I think school board, I guess, that owns
school board owns
Booster Stadium, but
yeah.
Vanguard's the only ones don't have on-site football facilities, so may work out a deal with. Move them over there and
the track behind it and everything.
Yep.
Is that going to be used for anybody?
Nothing.
It's never used.
It's for Vanguard.
Around, right?
That's probably, I don't know if it's used or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be quiet.
All right. Councilman Nybuckle.
This is kind of a historical question, so whoever has the answer can take a shot. But the neighborhood and mini parks that we currently have, how did we acquire those? Were those like sort of vacant lots or lots that came up vacant and we've decided to convert them, or does anybody kind of know the history of those? Or were they intentionally placed?
Most of our neighborhood parks were donated through land development projects. So if a subdivision was being developed, they were asked to set aside a certain amount of acreage. And a lot of times there's restrictions on that property so that you can't convert it back. So we actually did a inventory probably about a decade ago, mm-hmm. trying to determine if we had pieces that we were maintaining but that we couldn't, they weren't really feasible to use.
Right.
Could we convert them, could we give them back, and could we sell them?
Right.
And someone could build a house on it. And in most cases we can't. The ones that we could, we did at that time.
Okay.
If they weren't usable. The ones that we have now, I think, are usable. In the southeast, for example, we have six parcels that are currently classified as urban open space,
mm-hmm.
that if we just put some reasonable facilities in there, some picnic facilities, maybe a piece of play equipment, none of them are large enough to do anything crazy in, but shouldn't be in the neighborhood anyways, then we can convert those to neighborhood parks, and then they become level of service facilities as well.
Okay.
So they're serving the neighbors, they're serving the need, and they also count towards level of service.
Okay. All right, just another quick thing while you're there. Those neighborhood parks, have we kind of identified the ones that seem naturally connectable as far as with trails and stuff? Is that in here?
We haven't really done that a whole lot. And to be honest with you, the connectivity part of our system, nobody has really taken serious in the past. And I think now we are seeing it.
Right.
We're hearing it from the public. It's when you start to get into that walkability model, everyone starts to pay a little more attention when you start hearing that. And so now we are thinking. We're seeing vacant land as even when you're driving around, and you'll do it now too.
Right.
You know, you think, oh wow, that would, you know, that
right.
this property became available. That would be an easy way to connect these two things.
Right.
A lot of it's going to come through actual development and through the mobility plan. And I know we met with the parks equipment provider last Friday, and he said a lot of the federal money is going to be funneled through DOT, and so it's very important to have your Greenways program be part of your mobility plan, because that funding is going to start coming through DOT instead of through traditional parks grants that we've been used to.
Okay.
And those equipment providers are gearing their business up for that, for more Greenways. That's a national trend.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just
New legislation pending federally that would provide additional dollars for this, but it has to be tied to the Green Ways initiatives and so forth,
mm-hmm.
if it passes.
Okay. Thank you.
Somebody called Clay Albright.
Kathy.
And we found a use for his land.
Yeah.
Was that a federal funded program, the Pennies for Parks program we've had in place quite a few years back?
No, Pennies for Parks is actually a county funding program, and everyone in the county pays a certain, I don't know how much more on their tax bill. Gina's here if you want real detailed information, but it's a county initiative. So it's a local initiative, but all people in the county, including those who live in the city, pay that fee.
Yeah. Is that still in place today, then, as far as we know?
Yes. It's up for renewal soon, though, isn't it?
It's expired, hasn't it?
That's what I wasn't sure of.
Peoples, Marion County Parks and Recreation Director. We actually bonded the second $10 million. It was a $20 million bond referendum back in 1988. The first $10 million was bonded, and then whenever it got close to the end of that, then we bonded the second $10 million. So you'll still see on your tax bill, I believe until 2017, all the citizens paying off the debt proceeds for that bond referendum.
All right. I guess the city's kind of somewhat, have we entwined in reference to the county there with the Brick City Park and Cohadjo Park? We've gone tit for tat over the years past where Brick City was utilized by the city, then it went back to the county. The county got it back again, then it was offered to the city. Cohadjo Park, kind of like the same thing, but now it's in the hands of the county, and
the city had an interlocal agreement with the county where the county, using Penny for Parks funds, purchased property that was intended to help provide service to city residents, and that included the Brick City property and the Cohadjo property. And the city on both of those pieces, the city worked with the county to identify the needs and the facilities that we needed to put in there, and then the city was to operate those facilities. We did operate those facilities, and then that interlocal agreement was dissolved, I don't know, 2008? And the county took back over maintenance. And you're right, there was some tit for tat, so I won't even pretend there wasn't, but we have a new...
But in this case, city residents are utilizing the county park.
Sure, the city residents do continue to utilize county parks, and it, it's not just those. It's the Silver River State Park, it's the Baseline Trailhead.
We have the one at Lake Weir as well.
And especially those parks that are located close to city limits. You can be sure that just as many city residents are using them as county residents.
Or some of the county parks charge a fee.
Yes.
That's kind of where I was fixing to go with this here on some of these parks that the county own and operate. And we're talking about allowing the county to come in here and utilize what we have. And the county has, over the years, quite obviously, in reference to what Daniel's saying, there's several places within the city that the county utilizes. Marion County Youth Football League, for example, has had exclusive rights to said field over the years. And the city, we city citizens that pay taxes within the city utilize county facilities, and we will have to pay a fee out there.
On some of them, but I know Cohadjo, Brick City, Baseline, they don't have.
Right.
So the ones that are closer to the city that are truly serving city residents on a day-to-day basis, there's not a fee for those parks.
Right. I spend an avid quite a bit of time of my life on the water, and quite a bit of the water parks and the river down here at the boat basin. I have a hard time paying that fee over there each and every time I go down there. I really do, for what I see that they provide.
Well, I think for $35 a year, you can get a park pass and you can have access to all of them for no extra charge.
What a nominal fee.
That is a nominal fee, so it's something that
very much
you might consider for something.
They only.
Thank you.
All right, Rick.
One of the comment that one of our recent city council meetings, when we had a gentleman talking about where we should cut costs and we might just eliminate Parks and Rec altogether as a way to save costs. The October Parks and Recreation
Non-essential.
Association magazine, there's three mayors from Newark, Chicago, and LA talking about how critical parks are to sustainability, economic development, public safety, child development, all those type of things. And I just wanted to emphasize that because I really feel that our programs are what makes Ocala Ocala, and has such an integral part in economic development and sustainability and quality of life and all those other types of things. And I just want to put that on the record.
Okay. Anybody else? I got several things. In your public visioning survey results, it was interesting to note here, it said 92% would not permit a child to play in a park unsupervised. Mm-hmm. Can you tell
I think,
me?
To be quite honest, I think that would be, that number would be standard in any city mm-hmm. if you took that poll in right now.
Okay.
I think that the whole mindset of safety in the United States has changed over the years.
Right.
And I think that even though we placed that number in there because I think it is important to understand that security within the parks is extremely important.
Right.
We had a fair number of comments that came through on the survey that specifically were directed to security within the parks and additional monitoring of usage of the parks and potential illegal usage of the parks. But I think that number doesn't surprise us. But I think it's just a fact of the age that we live in today.
Right.
That people are just more cautious.
They're probably referring to some of the larger parks. I'm thinking about just neighborhood parks where it's, you know, right there in your middle of a residential area.
My experience has been the more active the parks, the safer they are.
Absolutely.
And some of the areas where we have the most problems are some of our passive parks that a lot of people don't go to, and the ones that do go to go for the wrong reasons.
Right.
And just, I'll just
go
mention,
ahead.
I know a fair number of parents that don't let their kids play in their front yard without them
right.
being there.
Right,
so.
Supervised, true.
Yeah.
And then the other one, joint use school facilities. you know, Mayor and I were sitting here going through a list, and I was thinking about, I kept looking for Forest, and Mayor correctly pointed out that's MTI now, and it is on the list. But, you know, that baseball field is not utilized during a lot of times. I know Forest got a new baseball field, so that doesn't seem to be used. Fort King and Osceola, you know, right in the middle of a, you know, residential area. Those would be great to be used. And like Councilman Owen said, there's, you know, election here shortly, and you know, may have two new school board members. But I think that'd be worthy of a discussion, you know, to do that. I mean, those would be great parks to utilize jointly in the city. And one of the other things I was thinking about was on your next steps, align the budget and CIP analysis with the city council's recommendation, input regarding level of service. When would that happen? Would that happen immediately, or?
We're actually currently working on that right now.
Okay.
Right. I think that would be presented to you before the final adoption of
right.
A vote on that.
Point. You know, and you made a lot of recommendations in here. It's a great, great document, but, mm-hmm. you know, obviously I don't think we're going to be able to do every one of these items.
Oh, sure.
You know, but, you know, as we develop the budget, you know, we're going to have to prioritize which ones we want, which ones, you know, are going to have to wait, and, you know, some of them may be down the road. And, Gina, you said your Pennies for Parks stops in 2017? Okay. You know, maybe, you know, 2018 there may be a new Pennies for Parks, you know,
right.
And it could help fund, you know, some of this. I don't know. The Pennies for Parks was a great, you know, project when it was started in 88, and they've done real good with it as far as acquiring parks and stuff, things like that. But that was more of acquiring land more so than actually, you know, utilizing them as far as, you know, staff and things like that. It was just acquiring the land. But these are more, what I'm thinking for. Anyway, equipment and staffing and things like that are going to need to be involved in this. So anyway, but great report. I like it, and did a good job.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Rich, you have anything?
No, I was just wondering about the, well, yes. the survey that was taken, it's only 226 people.
That's correct.
Don't we need to find another way of, if it's 55,000 people in Ocala, 226 isn't an awful lot. Is there another way we can find to get the survey out so more people will know what's going on, that we're doing this? Because
well,
a lot of them don't go on websites, on computers.
Well, I think that you know, we've had multiple public meetings that have all been publicly noticed. All this information that was actually and the information that that we solicited at these meetings was specifically to help us help guide our programming for the master plan. Shy of knocking on doors, there is, you know, obviously there are other means. I mean, there are certain ways that, you know, given enough time and substantial amount of time, that you can, you know, actually do flyers and things with them, people's utility bills and things like that to notify them where to go. But ultimately the information and the website information that we received was very in depth, and got down to the nuts and bolts of questions that we would actually be able to actually ask somebody and just even in a public meeting. So it's you know, we felt that was probably the best method within a short period of time to be able to get information out along with public meetings.
I agree with Mrs. Rich. I was concerned about that, but as we move forward with individual projects and items to go, because this survey was actually fairly lengthy. You know, but to go back with a 2 to 3 question or 5 question survey on a particular element that we move forward, we might be able to find a way to reach out to a lot more people and get them more involved. And frankly, even if we've got to pay an agency to help us do that at some point, where they do a telephonic type survey, I think it'd be well worth our time and effort to do that. But
just so you know, too, when we're going through our neighborhood parks right now and redeveloping some of those. This past year we did Second Chance Park and what used to be Fort King Tot Lot, we're now calling Point Sienna Park, and Fisher Park. And when we do those parks, we actually do knock on doors. The rangers go around to residents in that neighborhood, and we, if they have a neighborhood association, we go to those meetings, and we ask them specifically, what do you want to see in your park? Because that varies from neighborhood to neighborhood. And we know that though the state provides some basic guidelines for us on facilities, if a neighborhood is heavy in a senior population, we're going to go light on playgrounds and maybe more heavy on tennis courts or shuffleboard courts and walking trails and that sort of thing. So we do want to make people happy. We don't want to just have this standard that we plop down in the middle of all these neighborhoods and it doesn't meet the needs. So we do ask. And we'll continue to do that to get that more specific feedback.
Can you tell me where Lamb Park is?
Lamb Park is, what's the other name for it? Competition Park. Do you know where that is? So it's off of 27, US 27, and you take a right, there's a Deliverance Church there. Is it called Holy Band?
East of Howard.
Just the Holy Band Deliverance Church, and it's a little small park. It's got a basketball court, and it's got some playground, and it is on our radar for this year. It's in the budget for this year to be revitalized. It's probably just a couple blocks. If you turn at that Holy Band Deliverance.
I know where it is now, but I mean, I've never heard it called Lamb Park. But yeah. In this paperwork, it has Lamb Park and some other things. So
it's frequently been called Competition Park by the neighborhood, but its official name is Lamb Park.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor.
Kind of a question. I don't know who it goes to. On the level of service, one of the suggestions is to adopt a minimum comprehensive level. Does that kind of restrict, I mean, as we go forward, if the census comes out and we see a certain level, is it kind of going to force the city to go and acquire the land, or is it just kind of a recommendation?
Well, if it's included within the comprehensive plan, you will be required to meet a certain level of service. That can be modified, obviously, through comprehensive amendment. But right now, you're exceeding your current level of service, and I'd actually have to do some of the math on it to see actually where you would actually, you know, how many more residents would actually have to come on, you know, move into the city of Ocala before you're actually would be even reaching the threshold. I think you'd probably have anywhere from another 5 to 10 years.
That's what I was thinking.
Threshold. So. But ultimately, if the level of service is a reference in the comprehensive plan, it is a standard that would be that you would be held to.
Okay, that's kind of concerning because we're pushing of our density infill, and if we do or don't expand the current boundaries, then you know, what point do we start to break that point where we?
Well, I agree with him. In my mind, when I thought about it, we're probably 10 years out and would have another comp plan before then anyway. That gives a chance to float with it and see how it goes. But,
we have to wait till next Tuesday. We may have.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things that Kathy talked about, we were talking about making changes in some of these neighborhood parks. I mean, that would obviously be real easy to mail notifications to all the residents in that area that we're going to have a meeting here at City Hall and talk about, you know, proposed, you know, changes. It would be pretty simple to get input on the specific parks. Anybody have anything else? Anybody from the audience have any comments or questions?
What would Amendment 4 do to this?
Well, there won't be any growth, so you won't need any new parks.
So we'll be good.
And a lot of people start leaving to go find jobs, so we'll probably have overabundance of parks.
Well, like we were talking about citizen
input.
Not
that I'm biased or anything.
There would be plenty of citizen input on the comp plan.
It's just a question I was hoping was going to get recorded in the newspaper.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Okay. Anybody have anything else? Do you have anything else?
I don't.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. If there's nothing else, we're adjourned.
Thank you, Council. Okay. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks. Yeah, this all goes away with Amendment 4.
Did y'all watch the debate last night on CNN?
You know, I didn't. I was coming back. Oh. crook and a dipshit.
Hey, Dan.
We're in trouble.